The Corporation for Public Broadcasting announced that its board of directors voted to dissolve the organization after nearly 60 years in operation. What does that mean for you? We're talking about NPR, PBS, and other U.S. public radio and television stations after we learned about massive federal funding cuts dissolving. And I wanted to talk about this because I think this is a huge moment, really, in journalism in general. And I have a lot of thoughts on it, but I'd rather go to an expert on it. So welcoming back to the show, Ben Bogardis, who is a professor of journalism. He's actually the chair of the Department of Journalism at Quinnipiac University. Hey, Ben, how are you?
Hey, good morning.
I want to know what your initial thoughts were on this. First of all, were you surprised?
Surprised. The Republicans have been going after public media for decades now. They don't think just philosophically that the government should be funding media organizations when the free market already provides media organizations. And it really came to a head in July when Congress passed the president's new budget and he signed it, which basically eliminated all funding for public media. And so, you know, this is one of the things that Republicans have been talking about for years, but they actually accomplished it this time. So it'd be interesting to see how, you know, once the goal is now accomplished, how it plays out.
I'm curious, Ben, and this is purely not a partisan question. This is honestly just an understanding. So about 60 years ago, when the federal government decided that they did want to invest in, again, public radio or television stations, why? So, like, what's the difference between having an NPR, a PBS, or that kind of a platform versus a CBS, an NBC, an ABC? Like, what's the real difference? Why would we create that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the theory behind it was that there were areas of the country that it wasn't feasible for a commercial radio station or TV station to serve, you know, very rural parts of the country, especially in the, you know, 1950s and 60s when the idea first came about. You know, they didn't have access to the type of media that we have now. You know, the internet wasn't around. People didn't have access to streaming or social media or, you know, the more powerful radio and TV stations and signals we have today. So the thought was, you know, if the private sector won't invest in this to, you know, spread news and information and cultural programming to rural communities, then the government has to step in and do it. So the idea was really to sort of step in where the private market had failed in the 1960s. But again, the Republicans had always been sort of suspicious of this, and especially in the modern era when they said there are so many choices out there now. Why do we need to keep paying taxpayer funds to subsidize public stations when private stations are now filling the gap and there are more technologies which enable people to get information in a way they didn't have before?
So, again, I get that. I do understand. I mean, I think to your point, Ben, we were living in a very different time decades ago where there was no internet. I mean, there were some people who didn't even have television sets in their homes. They were relying on radios, for example. So I get that. Mm-hmm. I get the need 60 years ago. And I do understand, obviously, it is not that way anymore. I mean, we have people who are literally getting their news on TikTok. So I do understand that kind of financial end of it. I want to talk about, though, to me, this is a real significance because, yes, I think while that the financial end of it, I could totally understand. I do think there is something to be said about eliminating these platforms in particular, not so much having federally funded stations per se, but the programs that are now being eliminated because these stations will no longer exist. I think that's a big deal. I think it's a huge deal.
Yeah, it is in some ways, but the Corporation for Public Broadcasting was really just a middleman between the government and the individual stations. They didn't really create their own programming. They gave grants to stations. They gave grants to studios to create the content and then give it out to stations. So if the government was, for instance, allocate $1 billion to public media, the government didn't get into the weeds of which station gets how many and what content producers can create what shows. They created the CBB to take that money and make those decisions for them. So without the government money, the CBBs basically said, we have no existence. So the stations are now surviving by asking for more donations. Donations have gone up as people have been aware of this. You know, they're finding private grants, but in the long-term future, in the short term, when people are aware of it is one thing, but 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now, is the same level of alternate funding going to be available? And that's the question the stations are asking themselves these days.
Do you think we're going to see networks pick up, or I would say almost adopt or even steal some of the concepts that came from, you know, a PBS or an NPR?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And we've already seen this. Sesame Street has a deal with Netflix to distribute their shows. It was previously on HBO, HBO Max, and streaming. You know, a lot of the PBS kids programs, they have their own app. They have, so you don't even need a television with a PBS station to watch those. You know, things like the British dramas that, you know, PBS used to do, you know, Masterpiece Theater and things like that, you know, they're now available on streaming services, you know, from Great Britain, BBC, BritBox, Acorn, things like that. So they are able to sort of get their content out to people in an alternate way. So the question becomes, you know, will the PBS stations be able to survive with a, you know, lack of funding? Will they have to consolidate? Will some in small rural areas close? The large ones in the big cities will be fine, but, you know, will the ones that the program was created for, small rural stations, will they still have enough money to keep broadcasting?
I've noticed, too, and again, we've got Ben Bogardis here, and Ben is with Quinnipiac University, professor of journalism, chair of the Department of Journalism, and I love having these talks with Ben because I just think he's got great knowledge and understanding of just the media world in general. And this just in this week, I know we were very focused on the snowstorm, but on Monday, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting announced that it's dissolving its organization. So after nearly 60 years of operating stations like NPR, PBS, it's going to go away because essentially there were huge federal funding cuts. And honestly, I was so glad you mentioned, Ben, that this has been kind of contentious for many decades. Honestly, it's not just in this recent administration. This has been kind of, I'd say, controversial. Why are some stations mm-hmm. getting federal funding? Others are not. The other thing that I noticed is that schools are actually picking up some of this content. So, for example, it's funny, when I was a kid, I loved PBS growing up. I got to be honest. We watched, you know, Arthur and Zoom and all these great shows. They were awesome. The other day, my kid, who's 7, he has a Chromebook at school and he's got all these, you know, online activities that he's doing. And, you know, I'm listening in the kitchen and I hear these very two familiar voices, the Kraft brothers, that used to do Zaboomafoo. I don't know if you're familiar with Zaboomafoo. It was a great show, but it was about, you know, animal advocacy and learning about the environment and things like that. And I hear their names and I hear them talking and I'm like, why do I know those voices? And I go over and my son's like, oh, yeah, I have access to the Kraft brothers and I have access to Arthur. So I've even seen beyond just a Netflix or a YouTube or an Amazon Prime or Hulu or what have you. I've noticed that schools have already started picking up this content as well in their programming. Maybe not all, but I've noticed even the schools are kind of starting to incorporate some of these things, maybe in anticipation of this happening. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's a great example of how the PBS stations are sort of expanding their revenue streams. You know, obviously you can find the stuff for free on YouTube and on the PBS app, but for, you know, a lot of places and schools, they would buy a license to, you know, play a certain number of shows. And so that is more revenue for the station. That's not government dependent directly. Obviously the government schools are funded by the government, but, you know, the school is deciding that it is in our, you know, interest to pay for this, like we would pay for a textbook, like we would pay for classroom equipment. And again, when the government in federal government stops funding the PBS stations, they're looking for other ways to pay their bills and to make up that difference, and sort of expanding, you know, their licensing agreements is one way that they can do that.
And it was called the Wild Kratts. I had to think of what it was. So Kratts, K-R-A-T-T-S, Kratts. But yeah, it's fascinating. I noticed that the other day with my son, and I thought to myself, wow, that's, have not heard those voices in 20 years. It's pretty incredible. Yeah, WACC bringing you news for about 100 years, actually 100 years later this fall. But did you hear about the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, CPB, deciding to dissolve its organization after nearly 60 years in operation? That means NPR, PBS, other U.S. public radio and television stations that were getting federal funding to exist are dissolving. And so we're talking about the significance of this with Ben Bogardis, who is a professor of journalism. He's actually the chair of the Department of Journalism at Quinnipiac University. So, Ben, the question always becomes, when you're now eliminating, to some degree, you're eliminating more of these media outlets. And again, I know that this can be controversial if people think, you know, PBS is credible or NPR, has it become slanted, things like that. My bigger thing is, when you now have eliminated more content for people, I do believe it then makes other stations or media outlets, what have you, it makes them, I would think, want to rise to the occasion and really stand out and have more journalistic integrity. I don't know the reality of that, though, so I'd love to talk to you about that and just kind of keeping our standards high.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, one of the things about NPR and the PBS station, some of which did newscasts, was that they said that we don't take corporate money. We don't run ads, so we aren't beholden to advertisers the way another commercial TV or radio station would. Not to say that TV and radio stations that play ads are sort of placating to their advertisers, but it's a different philosophy. Saying we're a nonprofit organization, we don't do commercials. So when those disappear, then what you're left with are TV and radio stations that do sort of have the incentive to sell ads in their news coverage. And, that doesn't, again, mean that they're only doing news favorable to their advertisers. But what it means is that they don't want to do certain stories which may turn the advertisers off. They want to think about the balance between what the people need to know, but also who pays the bill. So it does put the media industry in a little bit of a bind that now all we have are commercial entities putting out news, and that does lead to some ethical problems occasionally.
Ben Bogardis of Quinnipiac University, we want to thank you so much for what you do professionally, molding the minds of our future journalists, but also always weighing in on these really important media related conversations on WICC. Thank you so much. We're going to be right back. You're listening to The Voice of Connecticut.